Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings-on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Tom Hostey-Cundell, the Jesse March on Monday Night Football of the podcast. No one really wants me here, but much like Sky, All Stats Aren't We are forced to scrape the bottom of the barrel for their guests. And I'm joined by Adam Elliott, the Jorginho Rutter, undeserved Man of the Match award of the podcast. He doesn't always perform well, but he gets the job done. And finally, I'm joined by the Willy Nonto First Touch of the podcast. Did I mean it? Who really cares? We all love him anyway. It's Martin Riley. I mean, it's Dan. Dan, what have you done? Dan, what have you done with Martin? What's going on?
We've killed him. We've poisoned his food. We've poisoned his tea. And now you've got me. I'm sorry, boys. I'm sorry, audience.
Martin, if you're out there, please let us know that you're alive and what you've had for tea. Martin, Dan, what have you had? What have you stolen off Martin?
Tonight we had roast chicken. It was a lovely corn-fed one as well, like a fancy kind of organic type bit. With roast potatoes and carrots and broccoli and gravy. Basically Sunday dinner on a Monday night, which is outrageous.
That's so fancy.
Yeah. It's basically we had this chicken for yesterday and we were out late and we never got back to cook it in time, so we just had to cook it tonight, basically.
And Adam, what have you had? Have you had anything that fancy?
I've just really weirded out. Like, no, Martin, that's weird enough. And then I'm not hosting and I'm on a podcast. What's going on? Like, it's just a weird upside down world. But one thing that is normal and that has stayed very much the same is that I had the same meal last time I podded to now, I think, unless it was two pods ago, but I had meatballs for tea again with pasta. So that was pretty decent. But this is really weird and I'm not used to it. And I've not done this for a while, but I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, and I had Jack Harrison tea. So I had chicken and rice. But it was seasoned.
You had Jack Harrison for tea. Is that why he's not starting season today?
He's yummy. You know, he's yummy. anyway, we're here today to review the 2-0 victory over Plymouth Argyle. Definitely not here to lord over a snack. But we'll first start with some news. And it was clarified before this game that Bamford is probably going to be out for the game against Leicester and possibly the one after that. I can't remember who it is that we've got. So how are we feeling about that, Dan?
Worried. Not that I don't dislike Perreault, and I'm a bit of a Perreault fan, really, but I just think that the overall team shape is miles better with Bamford, isn't it? And just the kind of process and pressing and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I hope he's back soon. And it's a shame because I think he'd be excellent against Leicester. I think we need to press them and part of how we'll beat Leicester will be with good pressing, and Bamford's good for that as well. So, yeah, slightly worried.
Yeah, and Adam, are you worried about the next two games? Or did Plymouth game kind of like settle you?
Well, we'll get into that, but a little worried, I have to be honest. Not only because it's our biggest and hardest remaining game, to be honest, but also, yeah, just for the way that Bamford's helped with pretty much everything, every facet of our game at the moment. He's structurally made us a lot better. I know there's other elements that have come into that, you know, Gruev coming into midfield and Firpo going into left back and whatnot, and Routier moving further back. But Bamford has been one of the key contributors to our upturn in form. And without him, I am a little bit concerned. The only good thing is that we have beaten Leicester before with Perreault and Routier as the front two. So that's one thing. And another thing is we have won games with them, not just against Leicester, but in general, we had some wins at the first half of the season. We won on the weekend without him. So, you know, it is possible that we can win games of football with those two. It doesn't mean that Bamford being out isn't a blow, but it just means that we have other options. I would say if he's out for more than another game or two, I'd be very concerned. But if it's just one or two more, then, you know, we might be all right. Hope you feel okay about it, mate.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be fine as long as it is just in the league. It's just Leicester and Huddersfield. There is Chelsea in between that as well, obviously.
Remembered.
I did. I realised as well that, you know, I'm doing a lot of work on the Huddersfield opposition for the preview of that, and I totally forgot what it was. But yeah, you know, like you just said, we've won games without them, but with him, and now without him, we've won eight league games in a row. So how are we all feeling about that? Adam, I'll start with you there.
I guess the bigger picture is just where we've taken ourselves from with that eight winning run. In any league, if you win eight on the bounce, you're going to put yourself in a much stronger position in a league table. That's pretty obvious. But obviously where we were to now, and I think there's been quite a few things doing the rounds on Twitter and stuff about that, the sort of gap that was there around the West Brom game and the gap now where we are not actually, you know, second, we're not actually third or fourth, sorry, we are actually second. So brilliant, you know, and can't complain. And I looked at this run of eight games when we came into it and I thought, oh yeah, that is a good run of games to get some points from and really build up a bit of momentum and head of steam. And we have. I didn't expect us to win all eight. I was hoping maybe for maybe six wins and two draws, even five wins and a loss somewhere in that. But eight wins is absolutely magnificent. And what more can you say? And I think in the majority of those games, it's also been pretty deserved. There's been a couple that have been a bit cagier than others. But in general, it's been really good. And hopefully we do carry that into Leicester, because the five games we've got after that look also pretty favourable. So by the end of March, we could actually have a very, very healthy points tally going into what will be a really, really crucial part of the season, where we've actually got probably our most hard remaining games in the month of April, the likes of Coventry and Middlesbrough and Sunderland and whatnot. So need to make sure we've got some points in the bag before then, a healthy amount, and we have in the last 2 months. That's good.
Dan, you were dancing at the talk of 24 points out of 24 there, so I'm guessing you agree?
Yeah, I don't remember having this kind of run for a long, long time. I mean, are we talking like O'Leary's time, or maybe when we got promoted with Grayson? Having a run like this, it's just, I don't know the stats, but yeah, it's great. I'm honestly loving it. I'm loving how like secure we are, like how defensively stable we are. We just look so unruffled by most teams we've come across, and that's been a long time since we could say that about a Leeds team.
Yeah, and I know that it's a discussion for the preview, but it will be interesting, I think, from my point of view, how we look defensively against Leicester on Friday. But enough about that and enough of the news. As I said before, we are here to talk about the 2-0 victory over Plymouth Argyle, and so I will quickly start with a game summary. Leeds started the game with their usual 4-2-3-1 structure, whilst the home side set up in a 3-4-2-1. Leeds took the lead early on after starting the game stronger. Following sustained pressure, Jorginho Rutter's long ball was controlled very well, or very luckily, by Willy Nyonto, depending on your view, who slotted home with his weaker foot past Connor Hazard. Leeds had the greater share of possession and territory throughout the first half, but with few meaningful shots to mention, with Plymouth growing into the game as half-time approached. However, the only chance of real significance from either side came when Rutter's shot deflected onto the post. After a cagey end to the half, the second started with Plymouth as the stronger of the two sides, keeping Leeds pinned in their own half at the beginning of the second 45, although Ian Foss's side were unable to create much of note in an attacking sense, despite Mikael Miller managing a few extremely dangerous crosses down Leeds' right-hand side. Leeds could not make the ball stick in attacking areas and struggled to make inroads into Plymouth's half. With Plymouth now having the foothold in the game, Leeds kept their hosts at arm's length though, with Melier rarely called upon despite their territory. Everything changed when Rutter latched onto a pass from Joel Peru and carried the ball towards their box, before smashing the ball between the goalkeeper's legs on 72 minutes. And Leeds continued to disrupt the tempo and aggression which Plymouth tried to attempt and were able to play, and their retention improved from where it was lacking previously, and they had little difficulty seeing out an eighth clean sheet in 11 games. So, that was the summary. and we'll move swiftly into the interrogation. So despite the fact that Plymouth had only lost three league games at Home Park, I think we were all relatively hopeful after the recent 4-1 Cup win that we would be able to win this game. But it wasn't made easy by Plymouth. And would you say that our ball retention lacking was more down to our players and setup or Plymouth's approach, Dan?
I'm minded to give Plymouth credit for this one, actually. Sort of on the watch back. I mean, the live watch, I kind of felt Leeds were scruffy and slow, and you know, and some of the passing was off, and it was just a bit of a bits and pieces performance. But on the watch back, I was kind of quite impressed by the defensive block that Plymouth put up and how kind of aggressive they were and physical they were. It was a bit like, in some respects, a bit like the Preston game without the shithousery, if that makes sense. They played physical and they got in there and they broke us up, and you know, there were a lot of fouls. Plymouth gave a lot of fouls away, but it never felt like a nasty game. So I kind of, but they just did a good job of breaking things up and being physical, and they had like quite a high line, but yet they didn't have a high press. So therefore, they were kind of setting off our defenders quite a bit, or setting off Melier, and just leaving a really, really compact, tight kind of midfield area for us to play through. And we just kind of struggled with that, you know. So they were kind of doubled up on Firpo and players like that when they were kind of running into the middle third. And it kind of got scruffy from there. So I just think it's just like their approach was pretty good, and they did a good job of stopping us getting any of our kind of free-flowing game going, really, all that much.
Yeah, and Joe Shaw on Twitter asked, what did we make of the link-up play today? He thought it was a bit off, and he asked Adam if you feel like it was the travelling and mileage that were perhaps affecting the concentration. Is that where you think it went, Adam?
I don't want to put too much weight into like the amount of mileage recently, even if some individuals are kind of appearing a bit jaded at the moment. We know for a fact that they've flown rather than just travelled by coach sometimes and stuff like that. It does save a lot of time. Also, a few of our American and Canadian Discord members kindly reminded us that the long trips that they have to do in the States are the equivalent of a lot of teams' smaller trips here. Sorry, that's the opposite way around. You know what I meant, though. Basically, our longer trips are about as long as their short trips. So it's just kind of one of those. I don't want to complain too much about that. But I agree with what Dan said mostly, to be honest. It did seem to be like they were quite happy to sit on halfway and trust quite a few of their centre-backs to recover if they needed to in terms of pace, but not be pressing too high. I think a few of their forwards did in little areas where they could, but it was more about that than anything. It was really sloppy in the game. The retention, as we mentioned through the intro, was pretty horrible back to front from about 20 minutes onwards. We actually started really well, as we said, and I was pretty happy with everything. But then as soon as the opposition kind of stepped so high and they pushed themselves right up, it became really difficult for a lot of our players to play. And I think a few people noted this, including you, Dan, so I'm sorry if I'm stealing your words here, but mentioned that it was a bit like Jesse Marsh like with how the ball was sort of in quite central areas and quite congested areas and being turned over. And yeah, it was really difficult for us to actually keep the ball contained in their half for a long period outside of that first sort of 15-20 minutes. I think Somerville and Routier in particular really struggled and to turn and just play accurate passes out of that, and that isn't like them, but I think it is just credit to Plymouth in a lot of ways for that. I would like to say that those guys can do better individually in sort of getting by their man and sort of snapping away from the challenge quickly, but they weren't able to, and that's why the ball kept coming back at us quite consistently.
Yeah, and I guess that's enough about Plymouth's out of possession stuff, but how were they approaching us in possession, and why wasn't it successful for them when they got near our box outside of a few dangerous crosses? So, Adam, what did we do well to mitigate against their attacks?
I think that's the same answer as all season that we've seen, really. I think defensively we've been extremely solid and strong. We've got a nice blend of defenders in general with that sort of pace and power that you need, that aerial ability that you need, and the sort of spacing and way they're all set up together is largely quite nice. Even with Ampadu coming in, we've been pretty strong in the aerial department, even though they slung a few, you know, balls into the box and things like that. But yeah, we also do really well at keeping the ball and funneling it wide. So if they have possession, we will allow them to attack at our fullbacks, which is a little bit scary when you have a fairly weak defensive left back and a centre mid at right back. But we did pretty well. Like I said, the spacing, the compactness is always pretty good. I think that's been consistent for a while now. We seem to have nailed that, even if some of our own pressing hasn't always been good this season. That is a particular area that we're strong. Same with the rest defence. Okay, sure, like Miller in particular for them got down the our right-hand side, their left-hand side quite a lot and got quite a lot of joy from there from Archie, but I always felt pretty comfortable. Martin and I were two of the people in our group chat and the admins chat talking about how we always felt pretty secure and that we would see the game out even at 1-0 when they were putting on a little bit more pressure. Never felt like they had a big chance to speak of. I know that the XG says that it had actually an okay amount, but even when I was watching back, I was just struggling to find like really meaningful chances that they had. And I always feel like we'll see it through now. When it gets to 2-0, certainly, I was basically saying, oh, we've wrapped the points up. And I think it was Hobbsy that said he wasn't so sure with the way we'd played or whatever, but we've only conceded two or more goals this season in six of the 32 league games, and that is excellent. And I think a sign of a good team is going to be keeping the 0-1 column against you as low as possible throughout the season. And we have in, you know, 26 games, it's either been 0-1, and that's going to give you a chance in every game to win. So very, very good. And it is just that keeping the XG down, keeping the chances down. We seem to be so good at keeping teams at arm's length, don't we?
Yeah, Dan, for you, did you think that Plymouth were creating stuff which was making your bum twitch, maybe? Unlike Adams?
Absolutely, yeah. I was twitching on the day, watching the match live, just because it just felt like too much of the game, particularly in that spell in the second half, was in our half, and they were pinning us back. But on the watch back today, before this recording, I was just like, what was I worried about? There was nothing happening. You know, it was a bit like, and then I've looked at the XG count after, and they've got like, 0.9. Yeah. I'm like, where's that come from? I don't know. I genuinely don't know where that's come from. So I mean, this is a point that Hobbsy made in the group chat, wasn't it? That like we've got players like Rodon, and I think this is true of Ampadu as well. They're just great box defenders, aren't they? They're just great at clearing the lines, and it was just very much that game, wasn't it? So although Plymouth huffed and puffed, they were like, you know, they were up against like Rodon, who was just like having the time of his life, just heading balls away all day long, and Ampadu supporting him really well. So
almost like a training exercise for him.
A bit, yeah. Yeah. How many saves did Melier make? He made one where there was like a miss hit cross and he had to go dive to his right in the second half. Couple of good sort of set piece takes he had to make, but I mean, like, that's it, isn't it? Like, that's it really. There's one where he spilled it on the ground when it kind of got kicked out of his hand by Hardy, I think. Like, that's all I can think of, that like opportunities for them, and a couple of long range shots in the first half. So like watching back, I was just like, why was I nervous on the day? But obviously you are, because you're a fan when you watch it as a fan on its live.
I wasn't nervous. I think I was just frustrated that we weren't able to keep the ball, but I wasn't nervous about when they came forward. Okay, like a couple of the crosses scared me a little bit, but I always just feel like we're so compact now that it's so easy to feel comfortable. That'll change if we go up. It will, 100%. We can't keep the ball turned over like that and get away with it. You're not going to be able to. But playing Plymouth, and I know they've got a pretty decent home record, but I was just like, oh, this is okay. Like, we might need to make a change here to keep the ball a bit better or to try and get out of our half a little bit more. But that was about it.
Yeah, and Dan, I don't know if you've still got the numbers there in front of you, but if my memory serves me correct, we were running at something like 1.8 XG against in the previous seven games that we were unbeaten. So 0.9 would be a third of what we've conceded over the past eight in one game, which is a lot. And to have only conceded one goal of that 1.8 isn't actually that much of a differential either. So like you said, like, it bodes well for our defence, but we've also said over the past month that the level of opposition could easily have had something to do with that.
I mean, this year, as in this hot run, we've considered 0.5, 0.4, 1, 0.5, 0.4, 0.3, 0.5, 0.9. So this, yeah, Plymouth was one of the higher ones. Preston was the highest at 1. And the rest of it have been like half an XG or less. So it's pretty wild, isn't it, really? Yeah. So it feels a bit disappointing putting up 0.9 after having conceded 0.3 and 0.5. But, you know, okay, I'm being greedy, I suppose.
But that's how you win games, isn't it? Keeping the what's the average across that? If you worked out roughly speaking, it's really not high across those last eight games. It's brilliant.
It must be point. I can't do maths. But 0.6.
Yeah, 0.5, 0.6. I would guess. Yeah, brilliant.
Which is a fantastic standard. So Plymouth were able to create 0.9 XG, and we struggled to create as many chances as we did against Swansea in the previous game, and things didn't really open up for us until late on at 2-0. So what, if anything, changed around the time of our second goal, Dan, as lots of fans were calling for Farker to change something for probably around about a good 10 minutes before Rute scored our second?
Well, he did change something. He swapped Perreault and Rute around, didn't he? And it was pretty effective. I mean, Perreault, to me, had one of his better games. He was one of the few secure players in forward areas. Like, the ball stuck to him. And the job of the 10 on that day was the target man. I know it's traditionally the 9 is the target man, but in this case, like, the ball was played into Perreault at 10. All of a sudden, it was sticking. And then Rute and Somerville and James and whoever could run off him. And that means we just all of a sudden had a little bit of purchase in their half, and we could play then something to build on and play from. We had purchase in the first 15 minutes and got a goal. We didn't have purchase from 15, 20 minutes on until 55, 60 minutes. So I think it was just literally having purchase up front. Like Rutter had a bad hold-up game, didn't he, basically? We had a bad game overall, as we said in the introduction. So I think that was it. But the moment we got some possession in their half and got Rutter in a good position, he was able to like take advantage and, you know, bring his skill down to the game. So I just think it's as simple as that. We just need to work out ways of sustaining the ball in areas where we can then do damage, basically.
Yeah, Adam, do you agree with it was that change that made the difference?
Yeah, that was pretty much the only thing that did change, though, wasn't it? Because I think a lot of fans were hoping for substitutions to make a difference. I think quite a few in our group chat were as well. It feels like he still has this problem, Farker, with making subs and game management a little bit too late. I recognise that he obviously did that change, but it did help. Of course it did. But it's just, again, like, all a bit too late for me. That's the only issue. I actually wanted Rute subbed. Am I awful for that? I think a lot of us did. I think he had his worst game this season, other than maybe one or two. I think Stoke away was pretty bad, but certainly up there. It does tie in with those sort of retention dynamics that we're usually used to with him, in the sense that he might try some stuff that gives the ball away, but it's usually a creative pass or a kind of dribble against a few players, rather than in this game. He just wasn't even able to turn. You know, Phillips was right up his backside, for want of a better phrase. Literally wouldn't give him a moment's peace. Was straight on him. And have to say, bit of a shout out to him. I thought, even though there was that stunning own goal that didn't count, that aside, I actually thought he did really well in both games against us recently. And he's only like 19 or something crazy. He's got a really high ceiling, good athleticism, good physicality. And he dealt really well with Rute and Perreault, to be honest, whenever he got the chance to be near them. And so, yeah, it was good that we did actually manage to get Pirro sort of away from him and into spaces where he could sort of turn out a little bit better, because Rute's good at that, but he just wasn't able to in this game. It was a really funny one from him.
I think Rute has like quite a loose first touch, doesn't he? Like, he'll receive the ball back to goal and he'll flick the ball out with his right foot to his left, you know, and he'll turn onto his left foot. And I think Phillips had that like worked out, didn't he? You know, the ball will come into Rute, he's back to goal, he'll use his right foot, flick it out, and then try and turn and roll up and go away on his left side. And I think Phillips just knew that and just kind of cut that angle off quite well, didn't he? And the amount of times Rute was turning and losing it at that turn point. So I guess it's just perhaps someone doing the homework.
Yeah, it's really interesting that the comments in the admin chat were Rute stinking the place out and he ended up with man of the match and a goal and assist.
He got in the EFL team of the week as well, or something stupid.
Yeah, at central midfield alongside Sarah. That's a good balanced squad. But anyway, let's carry on the discussion regarding our attacking dynamics. Willen asked in the Discord if we could discuss Perreault at 9. And James Mantella on Twitter, or X, described his growing feeling of dread without patting the team, as we've also all kind of said that we will have eventually if it stays longer. So he said, with Pat out and Perreault and Georgie seemingly changing positions again, are we reverting back to the low level of creativity from before the new year? Is my feeling of dread founded? Without Pat's work as our number 9 and engagement of the centre-backs, we just don't have the depth in attack, and our midfield and build-up is compressed. Also, playing Rute in the 9 means he can't risk and use his creativity all across the pitch. So Dan, with all that in mind, can you talk to me about how we did set up and what were the issues that occurred with it?
Well, the setup was much the same as it always is, but Rute started the game at 9 and couldn't hold the ball, so that was the issue. Or couldn't hold the ball when Phillips kind of got his number for a spell. And I think the slight problem with Perreault is he's not a dynamic guy, is he? So he picks the ball up and he doesn't really turn the game and all that well. So he needs runners off him. He's technically very tired, isn't he? And he's a big, strong guy. He can hold defenders off. I mean, it's a genre of football I really like. I like kind of big, slow, technical forwards. It's like Viduk was the daddy of that, wasn't
Giroud.
He? But the problem, Giroud, yeah, absolutely. But when you're a kind of transitional team, then those players are sometimes a bit, aren't they? So the problem is in that he's not necessarily that dynamic. He's not the best presser of the world. So you need to have like your runners need to kind of like adapt to that system. And I think when we had Pat, we just had a kind of traditional nine who could stretch to play and essentially make space for Georgie and Cry. And when you play in Perot or when you play in Rutter at nine, you don't tend to have that stretching of the line. So it just kind of, it just compresses. And it means you kind of, your build-up play has got to be perfect and on point. And if it's not, like it wasn't on Saturday, or the opposition press you well, it breaks down. So you just get scruffier games, don't you? I think like it feels like we've got more of an ordered game with Pat because he makes the space to be ordered. So that's my concern. In the long term, if we don't have Pat, but we've also seen against good teams like Perot and Rutter be an effective combination, you know, away at Leicester, for example. So I'm not totally down on it, but I just think there are just some trade-offs when we miss Pat, don't we? And play Perot as the nine.
Yeah, I'd have many other views on that.
Yeah, not too much to add. It's more about you can recognise that Plymouth's line was so high and you probably want someone that can run in behind. And Pat's can still do that a lot better than Perot, even if his mobility is not as good these days. So that would also be another dynamic, and that might have helped us. Can go a bit more direct than we even did in this game. If you have Bamford and Rutter, and like Dan said, it just gives Rutter a little bit more space because that sort of area between the centre forward and the midfield is just a lot less congested. And yeah, Plymouth just made it really, really tight in there. Really hard to play out from unless you did go more direct. So yeah, that's how I see it as well. But I agree with Dan, I can't really add too much.
Yeah, and speaking of directness, Ethan from online felt we were, quote, so needlessly direct, unquote, in this game and felt as though we were screaming for a more orderly game via shorter passing. As you mentioned earlier, we'd almost reverted to Red Bull type. Did you see it that way, Adam?
Yeah, I do. And I get that when the back line of the opposition is as high as it is, there is probably that natural need to go a bit more direct and hit the channels. You can transition and counter pretty quickly if you do that. But as I've said before, my gripe with Farker is game management as well. And I think if you need to manage the game, you can't be doing that. And this was a big issue for me. I think Ethan added to this by saying something along the lines of the job of the midfielders is to alleviate the centre-backs from having to pass out from the back as much and doing their duties in terms of distribution. And without Strouk, he didn't say this, but without Strouk, that is still a bit of a problem for me. I wasn't actually enamoured with Roden on the ball this game. I haven't always been with him this season on the ball. I think he carries fairly well, but in terms of passing, it's not as neat and tidy, it's not as secure. And so he was playing quite a lot of loose balls into midfield. He wasn't the only one. Actually, not just midfield, sorry. He was like playing more direct balls into forward areas. That's what I meant to say. He wasn't the only one. I noticed that Firpo did this quite a lot. He'd try sort of a slightly risky ball to hope that Somerville might get on the end of it, and then they'd just cut it out, and it was happening quite a lot. But yeah, he certainly rode and had one of his worst in-possession displays for us. And Fark needs to get some of this in-possession stuff better in some games. I think for the most part in the last, I don't know, 6-8 weeks now, it's been really, really good. And it has been usually fine. But in games like this where the teams are going to make it more congested and a little bit more sort of centrally compact, then I think you need... I flash back to the Stoke game there when I was saying that, things like that. And there were a few others, the Sunderland game, we struggled a little bit as well in games like that. So I think when you have that, you want to kind of have the centre mids not being bypassed as much by the centre-backs, and you want them in spaces that they can receive the ball and take that pressure away from the centre-backs and back four quite a lot more. I think we were a bit too hopeful with some of our balls, and yeah, that handed itself into the sort of turnovers and the scrappiness overall. And Farker, basically, I think part of it is Grev and Kamara finding it difficult to just get involved, but it's part of his responsibility to get them more involved, right? That's what his job is as a manager. So I think for a while it's not been an issue, but perhaps it wasn't easily spotted in this game for him, but it still is something that we're going to have to think about. I think we might have to think about it more against these sort of lower end teams, these middling teams in games where they can make it like this if they're choosing to do so. So yeah, it is a bit of a concern for me, but I feel like Dan's going to disagree now.
Well, I'm not. watching the game back and watching the game live, I was like, yeah, we're playing long here and this is really scruffy. And like, there's one point I noticed Gurev pointing at, I think it was Rodon, play long, you know, pointing, play long. So I kind of agreed with you. And that, then I looked at the numbers and like, the ratio of like, you know, short, medium and long passes. And it was like just a completely normal volume of long passes for Leeds this season. Like, we attempted 579 passes in this game and 57 of them, sorry, were long passes. So, you know, roughly 10% of our passes were long. In the previous game, we had 62 attempted long passes from a total of 659. Previous game, 537 passes, 53 long. So it's just the same kind of ratio, roughly give or take. So the numbers kind of don't back it up. But our pass completion overall was at the lower end of normal. It was like 83% rather than kind of high 80s that we see from a lot of games. So I think it was a scruffy game, which makes you think we're playing long, but it was just scruffy, not long. Is the gist of it?
Yeah, and I think for me, it's possibly that the passes were slightly different. Obviously, long passes are distance, and it's potential. So what could be perceived is if we're doing more long passes that were in the air than on the ground, they can come across as just that being more direct. So it's just kind of like that perception that we look more direct, but really it's just the way that we're being direct that's a bit different. And, you know, that could also have led to why we saw the ball maybe not sticking as much, because there was that little change in directness. But that's the only way that I can think is why we all watched the game, perceived it as that we were looking more direct, but then the numbers don't show that.
Maybe it's because also some of them were mid-range and that's not on account as long-range. And I think maybe our mid-range was a little bit higher than the average. I don't know. I don't have the numbers, but that's just going to be one of my guesses as well. Yeah.
It looks to be in like normal range, just scanning the numbers without doing any proper crunching. 255 mid-range passes. Previous game, 297. Game before that, 230, 252, 220. So it just feels like the normal kind of range, really.
Well, I, anyway, just as an overall point for me, I just didn't think either Gurev or Kamara had their best game here. I think we all can agree with that, whether the numbers say it or not. I think this is one of their weaker games recently. I still like them as a pairing, and I think we'll go on to talk about them a little bit more later as well. But it just felt like they weren't maybe as responsible with the ball as they usually are, and not maybe taking charge. There's also part of it that's we're away from home. At home, we've largely just dominated with any of the midfielders we've had in terms of how we've kept the ball in the opposition's half, and we just weren't able to do that as much here. Fair enough.
I mean, there's a couple of factors that I've maybe play into that a bit, is that we're playing both Cry and Nonto as wingers, and they're not wide players, are they? They come in field, don't they, and get involved. And that kind of plays into that kind of that Red Bull, you know, squeezed four up front type thing. So, you know, maybe a Dan James might have been handy in this game, even though Nonto had a great game. Maybe Dan James structurally would have been a better option. Staying wide and high and just stretching the pitch a bit more would have given us an easier out ball for those long balls, and it maybe looks a bit less. And obviously Bamford not being there, not stretching the defence vertically, and we weren't stretching horizontally either. So yeah, it was just a compact game that we could have perhaps, you know, if Dan James had been fit and playing well, it might have played out differently and maybe been less scruffy. And I also think actually this would have been a good game for Ampadu in the midfield. That kind of physical battle in there would have relished that, and perhaps having Pascal behind him, who's probably a calmer passer, might have been a better combo.
I agree.
Maybe, yeah.
Say it quietly, though. A lot of the Dars don't like it.
Don't care. I'm right. They're wrong.
And on that note, let's go to an ad break. Before that happens, I have to plug the Patreon. Otherwise, Tom Alderson will kill Adam Elliott. And that is not something I want, because I really like Adam.
Someone has to.
Yeah. It can kill Dan.
Coming soon anyway.
Don't worry, patrons, you don't have to listen to this part. So our patrons get access for as little as $1.99 per month, which gives you ad-free podcasts, and if you want to pay a little more, you get other benefits, which include early access to our preview pods, analysis articles, videos, and our bonus podcasts. What have we got coming up soon? We got an under-21s pod coming, Dan?
Nothing's planned at the moment. I've been a bit busy, I'm afraid. So yes, I think we should do, because there's been some games and changes. So yes, put a pin in that one, but yeah.
Charlie Allen's gone on loan to York. We didn't put that in the news.
We didn't put that in the news.
Anyway, carry on. This is an ad break.
But we'll carry on. There you go. There's some free news. This is the sort of stuff you get as a patron. And so if you want more up-to-date news and you want to find out more about our Patreon, please visit Adam. Don't visit Adam. He's going to tell you the URL.
Patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
Perfect.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And now let's get back to the analysis, where in this half we're going to talk more about players specifically rather than tactics. So we've already discussed Peru a bit, but how do you think he got on as a nine again? Obviously, we have slightly discussed this. He looked better than plenty of our other forwards, though, didn't he, Adam?
He did, yes. I think Dan summed it up nicely, actually, with what he said before. Just a little bit more secure with his touches and quite a few nice bits where he could lay it off or you know, link play a little bit better. And I was pretty happy with him, I have to say. I also thought, you know, he comes deep a lot, and we know this, so he doesn't lead the line. But he was pretty good, and I would be very happy with him for another game or two if he plays as he has in the last couple of games. I didn't really mind when he had to make the switch to 10 as well. It was all pretty nice. Pretty happy with him. And I think he's become a little bit underrated by our fan base, actually, recently. I'm not super high on him as a nine, as a line leader, in terms of intensity, in terms of pace and things like that. He's not got those qualities that Bamford has, but he is good at other stuff that maybe he's going a bit unnoticed. I think he chooses the safer and good option quite a lot of the time. And with the second goal, that was pretty evident as well, when he sort of turns, plays after Gray wins it back nicely, turns, plays a nice pass to Rutter, Rutter's away. Should Rutter pass it to Somerville? Probably yes, but at least it created the chance in the first place with Perreault quickly getting it out to him. So yeah, really, really happy with quite a lot of his performance in the last couple of games now.
Yeah, Dan, you're not along in agreement there.
Yeah, totally. I really rate him. I just feel like we've not kind of used him. Or we've not kind of, the setup isn't perfect for him, is it really? But like in terms of his when he does contribute, I'm always like, oh, I think he's always impactful. It's just he doesn't contribute enough. So I think we just need to work out ways of getting him in the game more and making sure the other runners, you know, draw players away from him, you know, and make the right kind of runs that suit him. So I just think he's a useful player to have around. He's not a perfect fit for what we need, granted, but still a good footballer, and I like watching good footballers. So. That's fine.
Yeah, I think the bit that actually shocked me was his actual assist for Rutter's goal. Like, that pass was very good, which we haven't seen from him much, that sort of passing. And sticking with the attack, how do we feel Nonto played? I mean, we've discussed him previously. Do we think that he performed better than Perreault, Dan?
Yeah, I would probably my man of the match, Nonto, probably.
You're meant to be Martin today, so you've got to save Rutter.
Yeah, I mean, I love Georgie. I really do. I was an early Georgie adoptee, so I'm all for it. But he had a stinker. But then he took his goal well, so, you know, whatever. But yeah, I thought Nonto had a great game. Similar to Perreault, really. He was secure, wasn't he? He wasn't giving the ball away, and he wasn't chucking, you know, he wasn't passing the ball into touch like Somerville was. And, you know, and if the move wasn't on, he was pretty good at turning out and recycling the ball, wasn't he? And going again. And he had some nice combinations with Archie. So, Just generally, like, a really nice, tidy game. I thought he worked really hard. He's, generally speaking, not a great presser or not a great defensive player. I get the vibe he's working on that, and that's getting a bit better, just generally, across the last few weeks. And I'm choosing to believe that the first touch for his goal was intentional, and it was genius. Ask me tomorrow, I'll say it was lucky, but, you know. So yeah, just a really nice sort of tidy game, and just look, it's just great to have him coming into form right now, because it just kind of keeps the run going, doesn't it? You know, you need to have your forwards all stepping up at different times. It's just a really nice bonus having him step up now while Dan James has got a knock. So that's all good. Long may it continue. And like I say, I think he's probably a better winger for bringing Archie Gray out to play a bit more, if that makes sense, than Dan James. You know, he kind of draws Archie into kind of combination play high up the pitch. Dan James. He draws Archie Gray into combination play high up the pitch, which is nice.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on that it was an intentional touch around the defender on that one, Dan. And Adam, as Dan alluded to, and as our lovely friend from Focus on Leeds, Tom Wilson, asked, do we get more out of Archie Gray when we play Nyonta than when we play James?
Well, first of all, I have to say I agree. I thought his retention was the best of any of our forward players, and I include Perot in that. I thought he was decent, but I think Nyonta was definitely the best at making the ball stick, which is really, really good, and it does alleviate pressure from other players if you can do that and carry for a moment, and he did that quite well. Also, just to answer both your questions, George Ellick did a poll asking Nyonta whether it was a great touch or whether it was a bad touch and lucky. And the answer is, drumroll, 52%, so not very much, said that it was a bad touch and it was lucky, out of 208 voters. So, you know,
the cursed ratio.
Yep, exactly. But I'm all for good touch because I am a Leeds fan. So, yes. But yeah, about Archie Gray and Nyonta, it certainly looks better at combining with Archie. I also think there's a couple of reasons for this. I basically think, well, yeah, Nonto's a little bit more of a technical footballer, so he's going to allow Gray to sort of bounce balls off him pretty easily, and he did that a few times in this game. I actually thought some of Gray's early passing was a little bit sloppy, but he still has that ability to sort of bounce it off Nyonta where he likes to. And the other thing is, I think that Nyonta, as we've sort of mentioned, has that tendency to sort of drift in field a little bit, which Archie then is allowed to, if he wants to, you know, go past him and actually overlap. And I know that he's playing the sort of more reserved and conservative right back role, but he can still do that a little bit if he wants, and he does. So that again opens up the pitch for him if Nyonta comes in field, and it means we can flip the fullbacks for us, you know, for a spell if we have to when we're attacking. And I quite like that dynamic. I do think that recently the wingers and the fullbacks have become a little bit less sort of structured in the way that one's high and wide. I don't think we're seeing that quite as much. Maybe a little bit more with Firpo at left back, and he will get forward. But we're also seeing Gray in good positions in attacking areas, and I think Nyonta is just his best partner. This isn't a slight on James at all, and I think there are games where he might be suited more, even including this one. Perhaps he could have stretched the pitch, as we mentioned before. But it is just that Nyonta is like a little bit more intelligent, and that combination has really, really developed nicely, and it really helps Archie. It's just crazy how young that is as a flank. I think the average age is, what, 18 and a half? So, yeah, that's nuts. But I'm very much for this continuing, and Nonto's form has been excellent. Let's just be honest about this now, like, for a while. And obviously, another goal here, but it's just all-round display was again, top-notch. Seems just really confident again, which is good to see.
Yeah, and I think we've said as well, regarding that, you might have touched on it there, Adam, and that with Nyonta, we're much more a symmetrical team rather than asymmetrical compared to how we would be set up with Dan James. But yeah, I agree. I think it's a case of, you know, if we've got Nyonta in form and you've got Dan James coming back, we can maybe finally do the horses for courses that me and Dan constantly try and push regarding the players that we've got. But Farker just seems to go with whichever team's performing and doesn't change a winning side, so unless he's forced to. But something which we didn't expect to see, I think, and our lovely friend and new member of the pod, Will Clay, has asked us, Robert's coming on in what looked like a right wing role. Do we have any thoughts on that, and how likely is this to be something that we do a lot going forwards? Adam, I'll come to you first.
I don't think it's going to happen consistently, let's put it that way. I think it's a potential that Farker was noticing the threat of Miller on the left, maybe too late, because I think the sub was made on like 82 minutes or something. And he realised it might be better to have a little bit more support down that side for Archie. And I don't think we're going to see it all that often. I think it's more likely that he'll be used as a fullback. What I'm more interested in knowing with Roberts is where he's going to be deployed going forwards in terms of the fullback role, because I think he could probably play as a left back if we needed him to. And I think there will come a time when that's needed. And I think at some point he will come into the team at right back and start there Don't know when it'll be. I just think Archie Gray is not going to play every single game from now to the end of the season at right back, even if you don't change your winning side. There'll come a time when it just feels like Roberts is the obvious choice for the game, potentially even against Leicester. But yeah, I think it was more of a situational thing. He came on at right wing. Miller was the main threat for them down the left in terms of his pace, in terms of his crossing ability. So it made sense maybe to have a slightly more defensive-minded player. Not that Nonto doesn't do his fair share of work, but Roberts is a defender, so yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, Dan, do you agree it was just a case of shoring up that middle area?
Yeah, I think so. It's kind of a move that comes from the same school of thought from Fark, where, you know, you remember he used to bring Grove on at number 10 just to kind of see games out. We went for a spell of doing that, and they're all sometimes bringing Cooper on them, going to a three at the back. Yeah, just have a big guy to head it out when we're under a bit of pressure. I guess it's just a similar thought to that. I don't think he sees him as a winger as such. It's just a reliable senior guy that can come in and work hard.
Yeah,
nothing more than that.
Farker's tactical genius of bringing on seven attackers when you need a goal and bringing on seven defenders when you need to secure up. And on the last review, we discussed our midfielders and especially how they've been performing well at the moment, completing a large share of their passes. And at the same time, they've been playing quite progressively. But we had more issues with them here, as we've discussed earlier in section one. And so would you move Ampadu or Gray back there at some stage? Adam, you kind of touched on that. So with regards to Roberts going to right back, Dan, what's your thoughts?
I mean, if I was putting out my preferred 11, everybody's fit, then it's probably Ampadu Kamara, but I expect soon to be Ampadu Gray as our midfield pair. You know, and just in terms of pure all-round ability, and I particularly think if we go up, I think their athleticism would be more useful in there than Grove and Kamara. So I think long-term, Ampadu Gray is our kind of double pivot long-term, isn't it? That's where I see it. So at some point, I'd like to see that combination, you know, get used and grow. So that'd be my view as a long-term thing. But right now, I'm really digging Grove's like passing and build-up play. So and as we're trying to be a more dominant ball, you know, ball-heavy team at the possession-heavy team at the moment, then I guess Grove is the right cog piece to have in that team at the moment. But I think long-term, it's Ampadu and Gray, isn't it?
Dan thinks Grove right now is the right cog, and in the future, Ampadu and Gray. Adam, who is our best centre midfield pairing? And this is now definitive once you say it.
Wow, that's pressure. Can I answer a little bit more around it first and then give my answer? Is that acceptable?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I agree about the sort of deep line playmaker and the sort of constant combination passing that Grove brings to a team. Not as much in this game, but in general, I think that's obviously needed. And the short range snappy passing is pretty useful. You want your metronome to do that. And I don't think Ampadu is that always. He can do it a little bit, but not maybe to the same level and extent that Grove does. I have to say, I would love to see at some stage Ampadu and Grove as a pairing. I know it's been used once against Stoke. I know it didn't work, but I just want to see it a game or two, perhaps just to give it another go, especially because at that time Grove wasn't very well bedded in, and I think quite a lot of us weren't very keen on him at that time. And now he's absolutely loved in the fan base, so I can't see him playing like he did in that game again, let's put it that way. I think that he'll be a lot better with you know, whoever he plays with at the moment. But I do agree with Dan about Ampadu being in there for like 100%. There's no way he's not one of the two. And I think, yeah, the long-term answer really is you want to develop Ampadu and Gray. And I think if we get promoted, I think that's what the club would want. And Afaka would probably want in the long-term. I think you want the two youngest, not by much, but they are the two youngest in there than any other combination. And I think they're probably the most well-balanced. And if Gray has a nice steep development curve in the next 18 months, you could be talking about a very, very, very expensive player and a really, really healthy central midfield pairing that's not very old whatsoever. You know, in 18 months' time, they'll be, what, 19 and 24? It's just something that I would like to see long-term, but I am very happy with basically all our midfielders because the short answer really is that I think this is the strongest area of our squad, and it's probably the area of the team that wouldn't touch if we go up. I think that these four can all contribute and play in the Premier League and play fairly well. Maybe the level will be a step up for all of them, especially maybe the three that aren't called Ethan Ampadu, but I do think all of them are able to compete in the top flight. So I would like to see them have a go, all of them.
I mean, if we had a midfield three, if we're like a 4-3-3 team, like an Ampadu, Gray, Grev three would be nice, wouldn't it? You know, left foot, right foot, couple of right foot. Gray could kind of be more of a box crashing type player, which I think would suit him. So there's different ways to combine those good players, isn't there? It doesn't have to be a double pivot, or forever. You know, we could go to midfield free at some point.
But I just do see that this summer we either keep Rusev where he is in the 10 spot as much, but whatever you want to call it, as much as possible, or he moves to the right and we sign more advanced and attacking midfielder. It doesn't mean that one of those guys you've just named couldn't play that role a little bit as well, but I wouldn't maybe want to see them play that for the full season. We probably would want a marquee signing there. But I'm talking way too far in advance here. We don't know if we're going to get there. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Ampadu probably has that bit more ball-carrying ability than Groove, and I think it's kind of been mentioned that in that game against Stoke when they did try, it was Groove who kind of played that eight role, and I think that this time if they were to play again, they'd probably play the role, they'd alternate. Yeah, I think Farker's even said that as being like one of the reasons why we're seeing better of Groove, because he's not being asked to do that role which Kamara is doing basically. So yeah, I think that's why we want to kind of see it again. We want to see it with those roles reversed and see how Ampadu does regarding being more of the progressor, of, like with the ball at his feet.
And he can defend a bit higher up as well, and he can engage people in the press. And I think that could work quite well. He'd be quite a good like Tyler Adams kind of player in that sense in the Premier League, where he just snaps into the press quite quickly. I think he'd be pretty decent at that. But yeah, I should have said that. I meant to say that they would swap in terms of their roles. Thank you.
I think they played together in the cup, you know, against Plymouth, the home game.
Potentially.
And I think it was kind of a bit like one sat, one went type thing, and they rotated a bit. I don't remember now. I was a few beers in, but
didn't watch it.
I think they did, and I think they were okay. I think it worked way better than it did at Stoke. But I'm you know, that's beard up memories for you. So,
and I don't know how many drinks you had on Saturday, but whether you remember or not, who else stood out for you, Dan?
I liked a couple of elements of Melier's performance, and I've been a bit down on him this season. He had no real saves to make, did he? I think there was one miss it cross, but it's more just his like general handling and like sweeping up. I thought was really like tidying, like and felt very secure. Felt like one of his safer performances. There was one little sequence where they had a couple of corners in the second half, and he came out and punched one and got a really great clearance. Then the ball came back another time, and a minute later, and he claimed it, showing that he was like the. It was the correct decision on both occasions. You know, the first one, the punch was the correct decision, and the second one, the catch was the correct decision. And it was just nice that he got both those decisions right and executed them. It's not something I felt he's always done. So, you know, I'm just hoping Melier's turning a corner. Maybe it was just on that front and look more secure. So just worth pointing out.
Yeah, Adam, anyone you'd like to give a shout out to?
Nope. Nah, joking. One player. I think this has been evident actually for a few games now. But it's just something that I noticed again, and I thought, oh, I might better mention that on the pod because I haven't yet. Ampadu's left foot is a lot better than I thought it was. I think he's pretty comfortable in using it and doesn't shy away from it when it's on that side, whether it's actually quite a difficult sort of 20, 25-yard pass or it's a simple 5 or 10-yard pass. He doesn't shy away from it at all, and you wouldn't know. He was, you know, right-footed. If you just had a compilation of all his left-footed passes, I don't think he looks pretty tidy, and yeah, so I wanted to give a little shout out to that.
Fair enough. Yeah, I don't think there's anyone that we haven't covered already. I think we've actually covered everything. Gonna call it there. So just a quick reminder that the website for our Patreon is Dan,
patreon.com/ASAW Patreon,
and that's everything for tonight. Thank you, Dan. We'll be back very soon to preview a mouthwatering game on Friday evening against table toppers Leicester. But for now, I'll say thank you to Martin. I mean, Dan. Release him, Dan.
I'll release him from my dungeon. Thank you, Tom.
And thank you, Adam.
Thank you. I don't have a dungeon, just to be clear. Cheers.
You're in Tom Alderson's. And help. to you, our dear listeners, have a great week and enjoy the Leicester game. Adios.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.